Okay, this is the Chronicles of Prydain, the first book, Book of Three. Chapter 1, The Assistant Pig Keeper. Taren wanted to make a sword, but Cole, charged with the practical side of his education, decided on horseshoes. And so it had been horseshoes all morning long. Taren's arms ached, soot blackened his face. At last, he dropped the hammer and turned to Cole, who was watching quickly. "Why?" Taren cried. "Why must it be horseshoes? As if we had any horses!" Cole was stout and round, with his great bald head glowing brightly pink. "Lucky for the horses," was all he said, glancing at Taren's handiwork. "I could do better at making a sword," Taren protested. "I know I could." But before Cole could answer, he snatched the tongs, flung a strip of red-hot iron to the anvil, and began hammering away as fast as he could. "Wait, wait," cried Cole. "That's not the way to go after it." Heedless of Cole, unable to even hear him above the din, Taren pounded harder than ever, sparks sprayed in the air. But the more he pounded, the more the metal twisted and buckled, until finally the iron sprang from the tongs and fell to the ground. Taren stared in dismay. With the tongs, he picked up the bent iron and examined it. "Not quite the blade of a hero," Cole remarked. "It's ruined," Taren glumly agreed. "Looks like a sick snake," he added ruefully. "As I tried telling you, you had it all wrong. You must hold the tongs so. When you strike, the strength must flow from your shoulder, and your wrist be loose. You can hear it when you do it right. There's kind of a music in it. Besides, this is not the kind of metal for weapons." Cole returned the crooked half-formed blade to the furnace, where it lost its shape entirely. "I wish I might have my own sword," Taren sighed. "And you would teach me sword fighting." "Wished!" cried Cole. "Why would you ever want to know that? We have no battles at Cair Dol Ben." "We have no horses either," objected Taren, "but we're making horseshoes." "Get on with you," said Cole, unmoved. "That's for practice. And so would this be. Come, teach me sword fighting. You must know the art." Cole's shining head glowed even brighter. A trace of smile appeared on his face, as though he were savoring something pleasant. "True," he said quietly. "I have held a sword once or twice in my day." "Teach me now," pleaded Taren. He seized a poker and brandished it, slashing the air and dancing back and forth over hard-packed earthen floor. "See," he called, "I know most of it already." "Hold your hand," chuckled Cole. "If you were to come against me like that, with all your posing and bouncing, I should have chopped you into bits by this time." He hesitated a moment. "Look at you," he said quickly. "At least you should know that there is a right way and a wrong way to go about it." He picked up the other poker. "Here now," he ordered with a sooty wink, "stand like a man." Taren brought up his poker while Cole shouted instructions, and they set to parrying and thrusting, with much clanking and banging and commotion. For a moment, Taren was sure he had the better of Cole, but the man spun away with amazing lightness of foot. Now it was Taren who strove desperately to ward off Cole's blows. Abruptly, Cole stopped, and so did Taren, his poker poised in midair. In the doorway of the forge stood the tall, bent figure of Dol Ben. Dol Ben, master of Cair Dol Ben, was 379 years old. His beard covered so much of his face that he always seemed to be peering over a gray cloud. On the little farm, while Taren and Soss, Cole saw to the ploughing of sowing, weeding, reaping, and all the other tasks of husbandry, Dol Ben undertook the meditating, an occupation so exhausting that he could accomplish it only by laying down and closing his eyes. He meditated an hour and a half following breakfast, and again later in the day. The clatter from the forge roused him from his morning meditation. His robe hung askew over his bony knees. "Stop that nonsense directly," said Dol Ben. "I'm surprised at you," he added, frowning at Cole. "There's serious work to be done." "It wasn't Cole," Taren interrupted. "It was I who asked to learn swordplay." "I did not say I was surprised at you," remarked Dol Ben. "But perhaps I am, after all. I think you had best come with me." Taren followed the ancient man out of the forge, across the chicken run and into the white thatch cottage. There, in Dol Ben's chamber, moldering tomes overflowed the sagging shelves and spilled onto the floor, amid heaps of iron cookpots, studded belts, harps with or without strings, and other oddments. Taren took his place on the wooden bench, as he always did when Dol Ben was in the mood for giving lessons or reprimands. "I fully understand," said Dol Ben, settling himself behind his table. "In the use of weapons, as in everything else, there's a certain skill, but wiser heads than yours will determine when you should learn it." "I'm sorry," Taren began. "I should not have." "I'm not angry," Dol Ben said, raising a hand. "Only a little sad. Time flies quickly, and things always happen sooner than one expects. And yet, he murmured almost to himself, it troubles me. I fear that the Horned King may have some part in this.
The Horned King? Asked Taran.
We shall speak of him later, said Dalben. He drew a ponderous leather-bound volume toward him, the Book of Three, from which he occasionally read to Taran, and which the boy believed held in its pages everything anyone could possibly want to know. As I have explained to you before, Dalben went on, and you have very likely forgotten, Prydain is a land of many cantrebs, of small kingdoms, and many kings, and of course their war leader who commands the warriors. But there is the High King above them all, said Taran, Math, son of Mathenwy. He is the war leader of... His war leader is the mightiest hero in Prydain. You told me of him, Prince Gwydion.
Yes, Taran went on eagerly, I know. There are other things you do not know, said Dalben.
For obvious reasons, I have not told you. For the moment, I am less concerned with the realms of the living than with the land of the dead, with Anavin.
Taran shuddered at the word. Even Dalben had spoken in a whisper.
And with King Arwen, Lord of Anavin.
Dalben. Know this, he continued quickly. Anavin is more than a land of death. It is a treasure house, not only of gold and jewels, but of all the things of advantage to men. Long ago the race of men owned these treasures. By craft and defeat Arwen stole them, one by one, for his evil uses. Some few of the treasures have been wrested from him, though most lie hidden deep in Anavin, where Arwen guards them jealously.
But Arwen did not become ruler of Prydain, Taran said.
You may be thankful he did not, said Dalben. He would have ruled had it not been for the children of Dawn, the sons of Lady Dawn and her consort Belin, king of the sun. Long ago they voyaged to Prydain from the summer country and found the land rich and fair, though the race of men had little for themselves. The sons of Dawn built their stronghold at Caer d'Athol, far north in the Eagle Mountains, and from there they helped regain at least a portion of what Arwen had stolen, and stood as guardians against the lurking threat of Anavin.
I hate to think what would have happened if the Sons of Dawn hadn't come, Taran said. It was good that destiny brought them.
I'm not always sure, said Dalben, with a wry smile. The men of Prydain came to rely on the strength as the House of Dawn, as a child clings to its mother. They do so even today.
Math, the High King, is descended from the House of Dawn, so is Prince Gwydion. But all of that is by the way. Prydain has been at peace, as much as men can be peaceful, until now.
What you do not know, Dalben said, is this. It has reached my ears that a new and mighty warlord has risen, as powerful as Gwydion, some say more powerful. He is a man of evil for whom death is a black joy. He sports with death as you might sport with a dog.
Who is he? Cried Taran.
No man knows his name, nor has any man seen his face. He wears an antlered mask, and for this reason he is called the Horned King. His purposes I do not know. I suspect the Hand of Arwen, but in what manner I cannot tell.
I tell you now for your own protection, Dalben added.
From what I saw this morning, your head is full of nonsense about feats of arms. Whatever notions you may have, I advise you to forget them immediately. There is unknown danger abroad, and you are barely on the threshold of manhood, and I have a certain responsibility to see that you reach it, preferably with a whole skin. So you are not to leave Caer Dalben under any circumstances, not even past the orchard, and certainly not in the forest, not for the time being.
For the time being, Taran burst out.
I think it will always be for the time being, and it will be vegetables and horseshoes all my life.
Tut, said Dalben. There are worse things. Do you set yourself to be a glorious hero? Do you believe it all flashing swords and galloping about on horses? As for being glorious,
but if Prince Gwydion, cried Taran,
yes, I wish I might be like him.
I fear that is entirely out of the question, Dalben said.
But why? Taran sprang to his feet.
I know if I had the chance.
Why? Dalben interrupted.
In some cases, he said, we learn more by looking for the answer to a question and not finding it than we do from learning the answer itself. This is one of those cases. I could tell you why, but at the moment it would only be more confusing. If you grow up with any kind of sense, which sometimes make me doubt, you will very likely reach your own conclusions. They will probably be wrong, he added. However, since they will be yours, you will feel a little more satisfied by them.
Taran sat back, gloomy and silent, on the bench.
Dalben had already begun meditating again. His chin gradually came to rest on his collarbone. His beard floated round his ears like a fog bank. and he began snoring peacefully. The spring scent of apple blossoms drifted through the open window. Beyond Dalben's chamber, Taryn glimpsed the pale green fringe of forest. The fields ready to cultivate would soon turn gold with summer. The Book of Three lay closed on the table. Taryn had never been allowed to read the volume for himself. Now he was sure it held more than Dalben chose to tell him. In the sun-filled room, with Dalben still meditating and showing no sign of stopping, Taryn rose and moved through the shimmering beams. From the forest came the monotonous tick of a beetle. His hands reached for the cover. Taryn gasped in pain and snatched them away. They smarted as if each of his fingers had been stung by hornets. He jumped back, stumbled against the bench, and dropped to the floor, where he put his fingers woefully in his mouth. Dalben's eyes blinked open. He peered at Taryn and yawned slowly. "You'd better see to Cole about a lotion for those hands," he advised. "Otherwise, I shouldn't be surprised if they blistered." Finger smarting, the shamefaced Taryn hurried from the cottage and found Cole near a vegetable garden. "You've been at the Book of Three," Cole said. "It's not hard to guess. Now you know better. Well, that is one of the three foundations of learning. See much, study much, suffer much." He led Taryn to the stable where medicines for the livestock were kept, and poured a concoction over Taryn's fingers. "What is the use of studying so much when I'm to see nothing at all?" Taryn retorted. "I think there's a destiny laid on me that I'm not to know anything interesting, or go anywhere interesting, or do anything interesting. I'm certainly not to be anything. I'm not even anything at Caer Dalben." "Very well," said Cole. "If that is all that troubles you, I shall make you something. From this moment you are Taryn, assistant pigkeeper. You shall help me take care of Henwen, see her trough is full, carry her water, and give her a good scrubbing every other day."
"That's what I do now," Taryn said bitterly.
"All the better," said Cole, "for it makes things that much easier. If you want to be something with a name attached to it, I can't think of anything closer to hand. It's not what every lad who can be the assistant keeper to an oracular pig. Indeed, she is the only oracular pig in Berdane, and the most valuable. "Valuable to Dalben," Taryn said. "She never tells me anything."
"Did you think she would?" replied Cole.
"With Henwen, you must know how to ask. Here. What was that?" Cole shaded his eyes with a hand. A black buzzing cloud streaked from the orchard and bore on so rapidly and passed so close to Cole's head that he had to leap out of the way.
"The bees!" Taryn shouted. "They're swarming!"
"It's not their time," cried Cole. "There's something amiss." The cloud rose high towards the sun, and an instant later, Taryn heard a loud clucking and squawking from the chicken run. He turned to see five hens and a rooster beating their wings. Before it occurred to them they were attempting to fly, they too were aloft. Taryn and Cole raced to the chicken run too, late to catch the fowls. With the rooster leading, the chickens flapped awkwardly through the air and disappeared over the brow of a hill. From the stable, a pair of oxen bellowed and rolled their eyes in terror. Dalben's head poked out of the window. He looked irritated.
"It has become absolutely impossible for any kind of meditation whatsoever," he said, with a severe glance at Taryn. "I have warned you once."
"Something frightened the animals," Taryn protested. "First the bees, and then the chickens flew off." Dalben's face turned grave. "I have been given no knowledge of this," he said to Cole. "We must ask Henwen about it immediately, and we shall need the letter sticks. Come, help me find them." Cole moved hastily to the cottage door. "Watch Henwen closely," he ordered Taryn. "Do not let her out of your sight." Cole disappeared inside the cottage to search for Henwen's letter sticks, the long rods of ash wood carved with spells. Taryn was both frightened and excited. Dalben, he knew, would consult Henwen only on a matter of the greatest urgency. Within Taryn's memory, it had never happened before. He hurried to the pen. Henwen usually slept till noon, and then, trotting daintily, despite her size, she would move to a shanty corner of her enclosure and settle comfortably for the rest of the day. The white pig was continually grunting and chuckling to herself, and whenever she saw Taryn, she would raise her wide, cheeky face so that he could scratch under her chin. By this time, she paid no attention to him. Wheezing and whistling, Henwen was digging furiously at the soft earth at the far side of the pen, burrowing so rapidly she would soon be out. Taryn shouted at her, but the clods continued flying at a great rate. He swung himself over the fence. The oracular pig stopped and glanced around. As Taryn approached the hole, already sizable, Henwen hurried to the opposite side of the pen and started a new excavation. Taryn was strong and long-legged, but to his dismay, he saw that Henwen moved faster than he. As soon as he chased her from the second hole, she quickly turned on her short legs and made back for the first. Both, by now, were big enough for her head and shoulders. Taryn frantically began scraping earth back into the burrow. Henwen dug faster than a badger.
her hind legs planted firmly, her front legs plowing ahead. Taren despaired at stopping her. He scrambled back over the rails and jumped to the spot where Henlin was about to emerge, planning to seize her and hang on until Dalben and Cole arrived. He underestimated Henlin's speed and strength. An explosion of dirt and pebbles, the pig burst from under the fence, heaving Taren into the air. He landed, the wind knocked out of him, and Wen raced across the field and into the woods. Taren followed. Ahead, the forest rose up dark and threatening. He took a deep breath and plunged after her. Chapter 2. The Mask of the King. Henwen had vanished. Ahead, Taren heard a thrashing among the leaves. The pig, he was sure, was keeping out of sight in the bushes. Following the sound, he ran forward. After a time, the ground rose sharply, forcing him to clamber on hands and knees up a wooded slope. At the crest, the forest broke off before a meadow. Taren caught a glimpse of Henwen dashing into the waving grass. Once across the meadow, she disappeared beyond a stand of trees. Taren hurried after her. This was farther than he dared venture, but he struggled on through the heavy undergrowth. Soon, a fairly wide trail opened, allowing him to quicken his pace. Henwen had either stopped running or had outdistanced him. He heard nothing but his own footsteps. He followed the trail for some while, intending to use it as a landmark on the way back. Although it twisted and branched off so frequently, he was not certain at all which way Caer Dalben lay. In the meadow, Taren had been flushed and perspiring. Now he shivered in the silence of oaks and elms. The woods here were not thick, but shadows drenched the high tree trunks, and the sun broke only in jagged streaks. A damp green scent filled the air. No bird called, no squirrel chattered. The forest seemed to be holding its breath. Yet there it was, beneath the silence, a groaning restlessness, a trembling amongst the leaves. The branches twisted and grated against each other like broken teeth. The path wavered under Taren's feet, and he felt desperately cold. He flung his arms around himself and moved quickly to shake off the chill. He was, he realized, running aimlessly. He could not keep his mind on the forks and turns of the path. He halted suddenly. Hoofbeats thudded in front of him. The forest shook as they grew louder. In another moment, a black horse burst into view. Taren fell back, terrified. Astride the foam-spattered animal rode a monstrous figure. A crimson cloak flamed from his naked shoulders. Crimson stained his gigantic arms. Horror-stricken, Taren saw not the head of a man, but the antlered head of a stag. The Horned King! Taren flung himself against an oak to escape the flying hooves and the heaving, glistening flanks. Horse and rider swept by. The mask was a human skull. From it, great antlers rose in cruel curves. The Horned King's eyes blazed behind the gaping sockets of whitened bone. Many horsemen galloped in this train. The Horned King uttered a long cry of a wild beast, and his riders took it up as they streamed after him. One of them, an ugly, grinning warrior, caught sight of Taren. He turned his mount and drew a sword. Taren sprang from the tree and plunged into the underbrush. The blade followed, hissing like an adder. Taren felt it sting across his back. He ran blindly while saplings whipped his face and hidden rocks jutted out to pitch him forward and stab at his knees. Where the woods thinned, Taren clattered along a dry stream bed until, exhausted, he stumbled and held out his hands against the whirling ground. The sun had already dipped westward when Taren opened his eyes. He was lying on a stretch of turf with a cloak thrown over him. One shoulder smarted painfully. A man knelt beside him. Nearby, a white horse cropped the grass. Still dazed, fearful the riders had overtaken him, Taren started up. The man held out a flask. "Drink," he said. "Your health will return in a moment." The stranger had the shaggy, gray-streaked hair of a wolf. His eyes were deep-set, flecked with green. Sun and wind had leathered his broad face, burnt it dark, and grained it with fine lines. His cloak was coarse and travel-stained. A wide belt with an intricately wrought buckle circled his waist. "Drink," the stranger said again, while Taren took the flask dubiously. "You look as though I were trying to poison you," he smiled. "It is not thus that Gwydion, son of Dawn, deals with the wounded."
"Gwydion?" Taren choked on the liquid and stumbled to his feet. "You're not Gwydion," he cried. "I know of him. He is a great war leader, a hero. He is not—"
His eyes fell to the long sword at the stranger's belt. The golden pommel was smooth and rounded, its color deliberately muted. Ash leaves of pale gold entwined the hilt, and a pattern of leaves covered the scabbard. It was truly the weapon of a prince. Taren dropped to one knee and bowed his head. "Lord Gideon," he said, "I did not intend insolence." As Gwydion helped him rise, Terran stared in disbelief at the simple attire and the worn, lined face. From all Dalben had told him of this glorious hero, from all he had pictured to himself, Terran bit his lips. Gwydion caught Terran's look of disappointment. "It is not the trappings that make the prince," he said gently, "nor indeed the sword that makes the warrior." "Come," he ordered. "Tell me your name and what happened to you. And do not ask me to believe you got a sword when picking gooseberries or poaching hares."
"I saw the Horned King," Terran burst out. "His men ride the forest. One of them tried to kill me. I saw the Horned King himself. It was terrible, worse than Dalben told me."
Gwydion's eyes narrowed. "Who are you?" he demanded. "Who are you to speak of Dalben?"
"I am Terran of Caer Dalben," Terran answered, trying to appear bold, but only succeeding in turning paler than a mushroom.
"Of Caer Dalben?" Gwydion paused an instant and gave Terran a strange glance. "What are you doing so far from there? Does Dalben know you're in the forest? Is Cole with you?"
Terran's jaw dropped, and he looked so thunderstruck that Gwydion threw back his head and burst into laughter.
"You need not be so surprised," Gwydion said. "I know Cole and Dalben well. They are too wise to let you wander here alone. Have you run off, then? I warn you, Dalben is one not to be disobeyed."
"It was Henwen," Terran protested. "I should have known I couldn't hold on to her. Now she's gone, and it's my fault. I'm the assistant pig-keeper."
"Gone?" Gwydion's face tightened. "Where? What has happened to her?"
"I don't know. She's somewhere in the forest." As he poured out an account of the morning's event, Gwydion listened intently.
"I had not foreseen this," Gwydion murmured, when Terran finished. "My mission fails if she is not found quickly." He turned abruptly to Terran. "Yes," he said, "I too seek Henwen."
"You?" cried Terran. "You came this far?"
"I need information she alone possesses," Gwydion said quickly. "I have journeyed a month from Caer Dathal to get it. I have been followed, spied on, and hunted, and now," he added with a bitter laugh, "she has run off." "Very well. She will be found. I must discover all she knows of the Horned King," Gwydion hesitated. "I fear he himself searches for her even now." "It must be so," he continued. "Henwen sensed him near Caer Dalben and fled in terror."
"Then we should stop him," Terran declared. "Attack him! Strike him down! Give me a sword and I will stand with you!"
"Gently, gently," chided Gwydion. "I do not say my life is worth more than another man's, but I prize it highly. Do you think a lone warrior and one assistant pig-keeper dare attack the Horned King and his entire warband?" Terran drew himself up. "I would not fear him."
"No," said Gwydion. "Then you are a fool."
"He is the man most to be dreaded in all Purdaine. Will you hear something I learned during my journey? Something Dalben even may not realize?"
Gwydion knelt on the turf. "Do you know the craft of weaving? Thread by thread, the pattern forms," he spoke, plucking at the long blades of grass, knotting them to form a mesh.
"That is cleverly done," said Terran, watching Gwydion's rapidly moving fingers. "May I look at it?"
"There is more serious weaving," said Gwydion, slipping the net into his own jacket. "You have seen one thread of a pattern loomed in an anavin."
"Aron does not long abandon anavin," Gwydion continued, "but his hand reaches everywhere. There are chieftains whose lust for power goads them like a sword point. To certain of them, Aron promises wealth and dominion, playing on their greed as a bard plays a harp. Aron's corruption burns every human feeling from their hearts, and they become his liegemen, serving him beyond the borders of Anavin and bound to him forever."
"And the Horned King?"
Gwydion nodded. "Yes, I know beyond question that he has sworn his allegiance to Aron. He is Aron's avowed champion. Once again, the power of Anavin threatens Purdaine." Terran could only stare, speechless. Gwydion turned to him. "When the time is ripe, the Horned King and I will meet, and one of us will die. That is my oath. But his purpose is dark and unknown, and I must learn it from Henwen."
"She can't be far," Terran cried. "I'll show you where she disappeared. I think I can find the place. It was just before the Horned King."
Gwydion gave him a hard smile. "Do you have the eyes of an owl, to find a trail at nightfall? We sleep here, and I shall be off at first light. With good luck, I may have her back before—"
"What of me?" Terran interrupted. "Henwen is my charge. I let her escape, and it is I who must find her."
"The task counts more than the one who does it," said Gwydion. "I will not be hindered by an assistant pig-keeper who seems eager to bring himself to grief." He stopped short and looked wryly at Terran.
On second thought, it appears I will. If the Horned King rides toward Caer Dol Ben, I cannot send you back alone, and I dare not go with you and lose a day's tracking. I cannot stay in this forest by yourself unless I find some way.
I swear I will not hinder you, cried Taryn. Let me go with you. Dol Ben and Cole will see I can do what I set out to do.
Have I another choice? Asked Gwydion. It would seem, Taryn of Caer Dol Ben, we follow the same path, for a while at least. The white horse trotted up and nuzzled Gideon's hand. Melengar reminds me it is time for food, Gwydion said. He unpacked provisions from the saddlebags. Make no fire tonight, he warned. The Horned King's outriders may be close at hand. Taryn swallowed a hurried meal. Excitement robbed him of appetite, and he was impatient for dawn. His wound had stiffened so that he could not settle himself on the roots and pebbles. It had never occurred to him till now that a hero would sleep on the ground. Gwydion, watchful, sat with his knees drawn up, his back against an enormous elm. In the lowering dusk, Taryn could barely distinguish the man from the tree, and could have walked within a pace of him before realizing he was any more than a splotch of shadow. Gwydion had sunk into the forest itself, only his green-flecked eyes shone in the reflection of the newly risen moon. Gwydion was silent and thoughtful for a long time. "So, you are Taryn of Caer Dol Ben," he said at last. His voice from the shadows was quiet but urgent. "How long have you been with Dol Ben? Who are your kinsmen?" Taryn hunched against a tree root, pulled his cloak closer about his shoulders. "I have always lived at Caer Dol Ben," he said. "I don't think I have any kinsmen. I don't know who my parents were. Dol Ben has never told me. I suppose," he added, turning his face away, "I don't even know who I am."
"In a way," answered Gideon, "that is something we almost discover for ourselves. Our meeting was fortunate," he went on. "Thanks to you, I know a little more than I did, and you've spared me a wasted journey to Caer Dol Ben." "It makes me wonder," Gwydion went on, with a laugh that was not unkind. "Is there a destiny laid upon me that an assistant pig-keeper should help me in my quest?" He hesitated. "Or," he mused, "is it perhaps the other way around?"
"What do you mean?" Taryn asked.
"I'm not sure," said Gwydion. "It makes no difference. Sleep now, for we rise early tomorrow."